I would call this special meeting of the Board of Directors for April the 7th of 2014 to order. I would ask for an approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Certification of executive sessions for the first executive session on the 2nd of April. I would ask Mr. Bulger to read the certification.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the board certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at the board of executive session of April 2nd, 2014, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under board bylaws, Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board. So moved.
Do I hear a second? Motion made and seconded. Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you. The second certification for April the 7th today for executive session, Mr. Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the board certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at the just concluded board executive session, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under board bylaws, Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board.
Motion made and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. The first item of business is a review of the proposed responses to the FMO audit. These are due to the Federal Transit Administration by the 12th of Saturday of this month and are here for the board's review and concurrence. I would ask the general manager to begin the review.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We've been on a rebuilding effort to deliver safer, more reliable, better customer service. 4 years ago, we faced major issues. Safety issues, the NTSBs with their strong recommendations. Among that was the fact there's a lack of a safety culture. We had deteriorating infrastructure, notably tracks and escalators as examples. We had expired labor agreements. We had major communications issues with our customers and our stakeholders. We had a metro access contract that was expiring. A silver line was coming. And the board also wanted to see a new electronic fare payment system. Behind the scenes, we had a hunkered down and bunkered organization weakened over the years before that. We had to give the highest priority strengthening those areas of the organization needed to address the challenges that I've listed above. In safety, we brought in new staffing, new leadership, and put it in a stronger place in the organization. Logistics was a major problem. We didn't have spare parts to maintain our system in a timely fashion. In the HR area, the human relations area, we did not have the ability to deliver the additional staff and put people in positions that were needed for the challenges we faced. We had to practically double the effort in acquiring engineering effort we've talked about before. We did not have the support for the engineering area had been deteriorating over the years through neglect. Customer service had to be improved. We needed more maintenance staffing and better maintenance staffing, and the same thing with the communications area. Carol Kissel will address the finance and administration area in a moment. And just like the rebuilding of our infrastructure is not complete, neither is our internal rebuilding complete. It's clear that more progress is necessary. We are fully committed to operating Metro in compliance with all FTA rules. Today, we will discuss our response to FTA's draft management oversight report. We do not dispute the 14 findings. Rather, we are embracing the recommendations, and we are taking the corrective actions necessary to implement each and every one of them. Addressing these issues will require us to build on changes that have already been made in procurement, grants management, budget, reporting, and risk assessment. It will mean strengthening our expertise, refreshing our training, and modifying processes and procedures to ensure that we are meeting all federal requirements and monitoring compliance. Many actions have been taken already, others are underway, and most will be completed by August, just 4 months away. We have our draft response to the FTA, and today our staff will walk through in detail the corrective actions being taken. To understand those actions, we need to first go over some background information so that everyone understands the foundation on which we are making the changes. I'll ask Carol Kissel to provide that background, and then after that, Tom Webster and Blair Fishburne, who joined us over the past year, will discuss specific actions.
Thank you. When I arrived at WMATA in 2009, I found a financial department that was in a state of chaos. Since I am an experienced sailor, the analogy I would use is that we were a ship without a navigator. In fact, an audit report in 2008 indicated that the personnel of the authority were not sufficiently knowledgeable to provide complete and accurate financial statements to comply with basic accounting principles. And that during the course of that year, key management positions were held by unqualified individuals. The comptroller, the CFO, and the treasurer resigned, and their replacements were not in place until the close of that fiscal year. Additionally, there were outdated systems, processes, documentation. The financial systems that we'll talk about in a minute lacked adequate automation, and our grants office was understaffed and undermanaged. This was the backdrop as Metro was headed bow first into the Great Recession, battling prior FTA-approved lease financings that were now at risk of default due to the downgrade and financial failure of many of the largest financial institutions in our country. That is a backdrop that I entered in Metro late 2008. To address these problems, I had to start by building the basics. I immediately hired a qualified comptroller and a treasurer. We closed all prior audit FMO findings, received approval by the FTA. We took 12 deficiencies from the annual single audit down to one report finding last year, and those were approved and notified to the FTA. We initiated an assessment of the 2005-2007 financial systems deployment of the enterprise-wide financial systems, which resulted in identifying critical exposures to the original deployment and weaknesses in our current processes. The findings showed that staff required more training. They were not using the system as designed. Technology had not been optimized. The system continued to be siloed and was not operating as an integrated one. As a result of the inefficient transaction processings that left little time for staff to analyze the information, and the management staff were performing too many staff roles. Today, we have a finance department that is operating on a completely different level with a set course and a direction. And I want to just highlight some of the recent accomplishments to support that. We led the way in the industry for closing out the risky financial tax leases and have closed out most of those deals without harm to WMATA. We negotiated a $5 billion capital funding agreement with our jurisdictions. We modernized our financial enterprise systems, of which the cornerstone of that was to use the automation as designed and to implement project costing and project grants modules. We introduced new asset management programs in anticipation of the Silver Line and other new investments in assets, and we developed a business intelligence program which are designed to use the enormous amount of data that WMATA has at its disposal in order to make business decisions and to monitor our performance. A new business model had been established by Metro Access Contracted Services. We operated a financially stable system with three consecutive operating budget surpluses. Standard & Poor's upgraded Metro's credit rating just last month and noted very strong management and government policies and practices in addition to the strong financial and planning policies that are here today. And we've launched a new fare payment system that would begin piloting new chip-enabled card systems, a significant turn which MATA is leading. We are marking the end to transits being held captive by intellectual property rights they don't own and adopting retail payment standards in the industry. With the upgraded financial systems, WMATA transitions from managing capital projects and grants with spreadsheets and manual activities to a best practice standard using modern systems. Today, our project costing, grants, and contract systems are significantly different than they were when the system was first deployed in 2005 through 7. Prior to the upgrade, the management of capital projects was almost entirely performed external to our financial systems. Now it is done in the system, and project costing, as I said, is the cornerstone of that system, supporting WMATA management of the operating and capital budgets, where we now have improved controls over project budgeting and spending. Project changes are no longer tracked offline on a spreadsheet, but in the financial system. This allows for the proper automation and control for grants. In fact, the work that has taken time to do is actually cleaning up grants that were managed in a manual way prior to these grants. There has been some criticism that we have received in not drawing down these grants fast enough. And the FMO is right to question our timeliness, but that is because we are operating on an abundance of caution to properly align these grants based upon the control and the design of the system, and that affords us not to draw down grants before we know they are right. Where there is much more work to do, it is in the defining of the roles and the responsibilities and the process of the organization, developing training people, gaining access to people who have knowledge and the experience to perform these new functions, and to develop a compliance focus to ensure we are doing the things that we say we are doing. So how did we get here? We've taken it step by step, working deliberately to make Metro's administrative functions work the way they should have all along. Let me run through some of the key actions that we have taken already. Since 2009 and the system conversion since 2011. We have revised the accounting and procurement procedures manual. The year after the system upgrade, we had closed 40,000 open purchase orders. We had closed 17 FTA grants and raised the standard for grants applications. We've received FTA approval for grant budget revisions. We have brought in line indirect cost allocations that have been approved by the FTA. We have submitted and maintained force account plans on an annual basis approved by the FTA. We have now automated allocations and automated billings to the jurisdictions. We have established quarterly financial statements and shortened the month-end close from 20 business days to 6. We've improved supply chain with better material contracts. We've developed accessible payroll deduction and documentation. We've updated IT systems documentation and disaster recovery plans. We've established governance processes for major technology projects at the authority. We've improved vehicle maintenance processes. We've created an internal control officer a year ago and trained 140 staff in internal control awareness. We've hired a managing director with government experience and a deputy chief financial officer with transit experience, whose focus is purely on the areas where we require improvement, people and processes. We've consolidated capital programming and grants management staff under the budget office. As the general manager has said, this is background information that we need to understand as the foundation for further changes. We have the building blocks in place for a culture change. And with the actions our team is going to lay out next, you will see that moving forward, we will have a much stronger organization in place, which places emphasis on documented processes, procedures, and personnel to get the job done. The focus will be on establishing a compliance culture to ensure we are following procedures and process. With that, I will turn it over to Blair Fishburne, who is the project lead to our FMO responses going forward.
Thank you, Carol. The Federal Transit Administration's Financial Management Oversight Program is a program for examining grantee financial performance and adherence to current FTA requirements and policies. The program was initiated in 1991. It's contractor-assisted and follows independent professional auditing standards. The most common type of financial management oversight review is the full-scope review, which is conducted to ensure grantees establish and maintain financial management systems that are in compliance with federal requirements, the common rules, and federal guidance. There are four phases of the full-scope review process: the regional desk review phase, assessment phase, the testing phase, and the reporting phase. For WMATA's full-scope review, the time period reviewed was April 1, 2012 through March 31, 2013, a one-year time period that ended just over 1 year ago. The subcontractor undertaking the review on behalf of the FTA conducted their on-site work in July and August 2013. An exit conference was held with Metro executives on January 24, 2014. The FTA's draft report was issued to us on March 13th, and a response is due to the FTA within 30 days, which is no later than this Friday. The final report will be issued by the FTA within 21 to 26 days after receiving our response, which is expected to be the first week in May. The types of findings generated by the review fall into three categories: material weaknesses, significant deficiencies, and advisory comments. The first category, material weaknesses, represent a deficiency or combination of deficiencies in internal control such that there is a reasonable possibility that a material misstatement of the entity's financial statements will not be prevented or detected and corrected on a timely basis. The three material weaknesses are in the areas of grants management, budgeting and reporting, and procurement. These material weakness findings led to the report's overall conclusion that WMATA did not maintain effective internal control over its compliance with FTA financial management system requirements during the review period. The second category of findings are significant deficiencies, which are a deficiency or combination of deficiencies in internal control that are less severe than material weaknesses, yet important enough to merit attention by those charged with governance. The third category are advisory comments, which represent minor control deficiencies in the design or operation of the financial management system that are not significant enough to adversely affect a grantee's ability to record, process, summarize, and report financial and related data consistent with federal requirements applicable to grantees. In total, across the 14 findings, the report included a total of 45 specific recommendations to correct the findings, all of which Metro Management accepts and will address with specific corrective action plans and date commitments meeting the time frames as prescribed in the report. Our comprehensive corrective action plans addressing the recommendations for the material weaknesses will also extend to and include actions to satisfy the recommendations for three of the six significant deficiencies. Our corrective action plans for grants management reporting will satisfy a total of four findings: two material weaknesses and two significant deficiencies. And our corrective action plans for procurement will satisfy two findings: one material weakness and one significant deficiency. And now I'd like Tom Webster, Managing Director of the Office of Management and Budget Services, to discuss the findings, process improvement progress already accomplished, and the corrective action plans we are committing to in the area of grants management and reporting. Tom?
Thank you, Blair. Good morning. As Blair described, the draft FMO report includes two material weaknesses and two significant deficiencies that are directly related to Metro's FTA grant management controls, and grant management-related financial reporting. I'll begin with a brief summary of Metro's FTA grant program. I will then describe the findings included in the draft FMO report and update you on our detailed progress in addressing the weaknesses and deficiencies. And I will conclude with remaining corrective actions and next steps that are necessary to close the findings. So first, some background on Metro's FTA grant program. Approximately half of our annual capital budget is funded with FTA grants. And those FTA grants fund Metro's capital rebuilding program, including a variety of important rehabilitation, repair, and replacement projects. With very few exceptions, FTA grants do not fund Metro's costs to operate the system. FTA grant funds are paid to Metro on a reimbursement basis, which means that Metro pays for the project work completed using other sources on an interim basis before requesting and receiving reimbursements from FTA through the drawdown process. FTA grants have a specific structure of grant scopes and grant activity line items that is prescribed by FTA requirements. Grant scopes and activity line item budgets are established in the grant application and are based on initial project plans and budgets. As project plans and expenditure budgets change during the execution of the project and of the grants, grant line item budgets and budget descriptions are supposed to be modified accordingly on a timely basis and in compliance with FTA guidance. Changes to grants after award are managed through FTA's grant revision and grant amendment processes. Revisions are used both to shift budget between activity line items within a grant, as well as to update line item descriptions, budget line item descriptions, to reflect changes to a project after the grant has been awarded. Some grant revisions meet certain FTA criteria that are included in FTA guidance to grantees that require FTA approval prior to completing the work. Whether or not FTA prior approval is required, grant revisions should be made in a timely manner in order to ensure that the grant agreement is up to date and to support accurate reporting. Moving to the specific findings included in the draft FMO report, there are four related to grant management and report findings. The two material weaknesses concern grant line item budget controls and controls over federal financial expenditures, and the two significant deficiencies concern cash and grant management controls and improving our federal financial reporting process and procedures. There were a few conditions that led to these draft FMO findings. First, Metro had fragmented and incomplete policies and procedures for post-award grant management and grant-related financial reporting. Second, many of the grants that were open during the period of the FMO review had expenses charged to the grants in excess of activity line item budgets and grant scopes. This condition resulted from the absence of activity line item budget controls in Metro's financial system prior to FY11, prior to the financial system upgrade, as well as previous inattention to timely revisions of grant line item budgets. Metro's previous practice was to charge project costs to grants for projects that were included on the grants, without timely revising the activity line item budgets within the grant to match the project expense budget. Metro would then subsequently seek FTA approval of after-the-fact revisions, which FTA typically granted prior to grant closeout. Also, during the financial management system upgrade in 2011, Metro transferred project and grant data for open FTA grants from the prior version of the system to the new system. The complexity of this data transfer presented challenges for timely grant reconciliation, revision, and closeout, as well as for federal financial reporting. These issues also had impacts on a few areas, other areas of Metro's grant management, which are the subject of the significant deficiency. One grant was not correctly set up in the system. two others were not activated appropriately. There were delays, as Carol described, in the drawdown on some of the grants due to the methodical approach that we were taking to ensure that we were drawing appropriately. There were some clerical and system processing errors that occurred that led to some inaccurate drawdowns that have subsequently been corrected. And grant closeouts on legacy FTA grants had not been completed in a timely manner. In the federal financial reporting area, each quarter, Metro prepares and submits federal financial reports for each grant to FTA, each open FTA grant. These are known as FFRs, and they include reports on expenditures, drawdowns, indirect costs, encumbrances, and other financial information related to the grant. Also, at the conclusion of each fiscal year, Metro prepares and formally submits what's called the Schedule of Expenditures of Federal Awards, the CEFA, to report on annual spending and other information related to grants. At the end of fiscal 2012, different methodologies for reporting were used, for reporting expenditures were used by the two Metro offices that prepare these two reports, the FFR and the CEFA. Because different methodologies were used, the reports were not consistent, and that consistency is required that we're reporting the same information. This problem was also a single audit finding in fiscal 2012 and has subsequently been resolved. Metro also lacked documented policies and procedures to ensure consistent and accurate federal financial reports and was not previously maintaining adequate supporting documentation files on those FFRs in the grant management files. So this is a condition that the FMO reviewers observed. The draft report includes recommendations on grant management and federal financial reporting to address the two material weaknesses. Specifically, the report recommends that Metro complete and transmit to FTA policies and procedures to ensure that expenditures incurred are charged to the grants in accordance with the approved grant budgets, that only allowable costs are reported on federal financial reports, and that information used to report expenditures on the federal financial reports is consistent with the information used to report expenditures in other reports. The process and procedure documents must be submitted to FTA within 30 days of the issuance of the final FMO report. The draft FMO report also recommends that Metro complete our reconciliation and revision of open grants no later than 90 days after the issuance of the final report, which would be approximately the beginning of August. I'll now speak briefly about our progress on these requirements.
Yeah, just a question of clarification. I'm looking at the brief that you have up on the slides, but I'm also following it in the actual detailed report. And it looks like you're covering material weaknesses 2.1 and 2.2. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So we're on pages 23 and 24 of the actual FTA report?
Yes, I believe
so. Okay, all right. I just wanted to clarify that because I'm trying to follow two different reports at the same time.
Parliamentary inquiry. How do you propose to go through the review of the recommendations?
Well, I'm going to
suggest the staff finish their presentation and then we move one at a time, and I'd like to make a statement at that time before we start.
I wanted to have the staff finish.
Okay, thank you. Metro was aware of both the grant line item problems and the inadequacy of our federal grant reporting documented processes and procedures, and has taken a number of steps already to improve in these areas. First, the financial management system upgrade in 2011 implemented, as Carol described, a significant control improvement that helps Metro management manage FTA grants and supports compliant grant management practices. With the system upgrade, Metro implemented activity line item budget controls within the system, and these prevent expenses in excess of activity line item budgets from being charged to the grants and being drawn down. This new control did not correct the line item problems on the legacy grants, but it does prevent future occurrences of excess charges from posting to grants. Beginning with the FY 2011 capital budget and concurrent with the capital funding agreement among Metro and the jurisdictions, that supports our current capital improvement program. Metro worked closely with FTA to establish a more structured link between Metro's capital project budgets and the activity line items that are included on the FTA grants. This improved structure facilitates Metro's management of changes to grant activity line items as the projects are being executed. And supports improved reporting capabilities. In the summer of 2013, last summer, we made the reconciliation and closeout of our legacy FTA grants a top priority for our grant management team. The grant management team is methodically reviewing and reconciling each of the open FTA grants. And since September, we have successfully reconciled, revised, fully drawn, and closed out 17 of the 35 FTA grants that were open during the FMO review period. We've been closely coordinating with FTA on this in this effort, and FTA has approved the necessary revisions and closeout amendments to complete those grant closeouts and each of the revisions that we have submitted to date. Metro has also established processes to ensure that federal financial reports, schedules of expenditures of federal awards, the CFAs, and other federal reports are prepared using consistent methodologies. Now moving to what needs to be done to address the findings and our next steps. Today, staff is requesting board adoption of a first ever formal grant management policy. This resolution will establish the policy framework for capital project planning, grant applications, post-award grant management, and grant reporting. The proposed board resolution will also direct staff to prepare a detailed grant management policy and procedure document to guide grant management practices and ensure compliance with federal requirements. This grant management procedure document will be completed and transmitted to FTA no later than 30 days following the issuance of the final FMO report. Management will implement and monitor adherence to the new grant management policies and procedures once in place. Management will also continue the reconciliation of the legacy grants that remain open and will seek FTA approval of revisions and amendments as required. As I mentioned earlier, Metro has revised and closed 17 of those 35 FTA grants that were open during the review period. Metro will complete the reconciliation of the remaining 18 grants no later than 90 days after the issuance of the final report. Of the 18 grants that remain open, management expects that approximately 7 of those grants will be fully reconciled and closed at the end of that 90-day period. The remaining 11 FTA grants support active projects and then will be closed when the associated project activities have been completed and the funds have been drawn down. On the governance action before the board today is a proposed grant management policy. When adopted, this will be Metro's first ever board adopted policy governing grant management. It clearly states Metro's intent to comply with all FTA requirements related to grant management and reporting. The resolution will formalize many of Metro's current grant management practices and provides a structure for the comprehensive grant management procedures manual that we're preparing. The resolution includes several key provisions, including a recognition of the importance of the linkage between capital project planning and programming and grants management. It includes a commitment to the timely submission of FTA grant applications. Grant applications will be submitted as soon as practicable after the adoption of the budget and the notice availability of funds from FTA. It includes a commitment to timely and complete FTA grant revisions and amendments consistent with FTA requirements. It includes a commitment to complete and accurate federal reporting, including the quarterly federal financial reports and annual CFA reports. It also includes a commitment to timely grant closeouts. It will direct staff to prepare the detailed grant management policy and procedure document to guide grant management practices, and it will clearly delineate grant management roles and responsibilities. That concludes the grant management and reporting section of the presentation. Catherine Pett will now describe the findings and corrective actions regarding procurement. Thank you.
Good morning. As Tom mentioned, I've been asked to address the matters relating to the procurement findings, and there are two. The first one was a material weakness finding number three, dealing with controls over procurement. And the second matter I will address is the significant deficiency number five, dealing with controls over the job order contracts, a specific type of procurement vehicle. And I'm going to summarize the findings of both of those together. In general, the findings were that there were inadequate controls to ensure procurements, lack of procedures, and inadequate training. But before I go into detail on those, I want to give you some background on the structure of the procurement office, council's office, and the program offices, and how those three departments coordinate and communicate with one another to perform the procurement function at WMATA. The chief procurement officer at WMATA currently reports to the CFO, Deputy General Manager of Administration. The chief procurement office, the procurement office itself has approximately 80 individuals, three contracting officers in that department of procurement. The Office of General Counsel has currently 1.5 full-time equivalent attorneys to handle procurement matters for the procurement office. And in addition to those two functions, there are program offices in the various departments at WMATA that are responsible for managing the scope of work and technical needs that are necessary to meet that particular program. So, for example, if there is a need coming out of the rail division, there is a program office there that will work to develop the scope of work and the technical requirements necessary and forward that information to the procurement office. The procurement office will then work with the program office to complete the documentation necessary for the procurement, and it begins the process that we'll spend a little more time talking about later in my remarks. At the present time, Council's office was involved in the procurement process at the very last stage, just prior to award. And again, we'll talk a little bit more about this later. Because that's some of the areas where we're going to recommend some changes be made. But historically, when I arrived here less than a year ago, that is the framework that procurement has been operating under. The council's office also, I think it's important to understand, at the time I came last July, there was no... although there was one and a half individuals that had specific procurement expertise, there was no separate accountability for the procurement function in either by title or a reporting relationship. One of the first changes I made when I came to WMATA was to flatten the organization of council, and instead of having all of the attorneys, which are approximately 25, reporting up to two deputy general counsels, I flattened the organization and created accountability to chief counsels for each of the subject matters. So for the first time, we have a chief counsel responsible for contracting and procurement. And of course, my other chiefs are responsible for other subject matter areas as well. But this was a change that was made specifically to increase accountability and performance over the procurement function and the other functions in council's office. So that's an important structural change that I did implement when I got here last fall. And again, we'll talk more about that when I get to my recommendations. The Office of Procurement handles approximately 12,000 procurement contracts a year, approximately 12,000 of the procurements are under the simplified acquisition threshold, which is a threshold of 100,000 for federal procurements and 150,000 for local funds procurements. In addition, last year there were approximately 100 new contract actions over the simplified acquisition threshold. So the total procurements is approximately 12,100 in the last calendar year. So going back to the specific findings of the FMO, there were findings that there were inadequate controls to ensure procurements were executed with the competition required. And specifically, the FMO report notes that there was a failure to solicit as required when awarding using the GSA schedule. There also was a finding that there was an improper exercise of an option on one contract. There were also findings of in several areas of lack of procedures, and specifically there was a finding that there were no procedures in place to determine whether a procurement was to be funded using federal or local funds. There were no procedures to ensure that there was not inappropriate splitting of contracts to avoid competition. There was a finding that independent cost estimates that were not regularly and being prepared as required, that there were not adequate checklists in the procurement files. There were specific findings on the contractor selection process that were found to be deficient, including insufficient procedures on the selection process, insufficient determination of expertise, and inadequate justification for the selections that were made. There was also a finding that the job order contract, master contract, did not have appropriate federal clauses. There has been, I think in summary, though, it's important to note that in large part the policy for the procurement function at WMATA was in place. There was a procurement procedure manual that was updated in July of 2013, and in a recent procurement systems review that was conducted at the request of the general manager and concluded only recently, the determination was made that the policy manual itself is largely complete. It appeared that most of the deficiencies were in the lack of procedures and in inadequate training to meet the policy, and in the failure to hold people accountable for performance when those policies were not met. As I mentioned, for progress to date, in July of 2013, there was a substantial revision to the procurement procedure manual. Also in January of 2014, for the first time, Ms. Kissel has hired an internal compliance officer, who is assigned to conduct regular contract compliance reviews of the procurement files. The procurement office has developed checklists, and in an effort to make sure that the chief procurement officer has the status necessary to respond to pressures from the other program offices, the procurement officer was recently elevated to become a full member of the executive leadership team. But there is much to be done to fully respond to the findings of the FMO report. And I'm going to summarize for you management's proposed corrective action plan, all of which management is committing to execute within 60 days of the receipt of the final report from FTA. The first area of corrective action plan is in the area of controls. Management is suggesting that there be a amendment to the board policy on procurement that would put in place specific controls, procedures, and training to address the findings. But on the controls issue, management will propose in the board resolution an explicit commitment to full and open competition in both federal and local procurements, that there be a prohibition against organizational conflicts of interest, and a prohibition of unduly restrictive competition. In addition, management proposes that there be an increase in the involvement of council at appropriate steps of the procurement process, and that there be the development of performance evaluation criteria to ensure the integrity of the procurement process is measured, and that staff involved in procurement are held accountable for performance against the policies and procedures. Staff proposes to continue the contract compliance review that was implemented in January of this year. In addition, there are a number of procedures that will be put in place. There will be procedures to explicitly require independent cost estimates, that explicitly require the use of checklists, that will ensure that there are federal clauses in the job order contract, master contract, that will establish mandatory procurement planning. The use of a mandatory procurement planning forum, which will use the plan of contracts process to coordinate relevant staff of the respective offices of the program office, the procurement office, the budget office, the risk department, and council's office. This will be an annual planning meeting that will be followed by regular meetings on an ongoing basis between the procurement office, the program offices, and council's offices. In addition, the procurement manual will be reviewed and revised and updated as necessary or appropriate, and the entire job order contract program will be updated with policies and procedures put in place as necessary. All of this will be supported with an extensive training program that will begin immediately and will require annual retraining. This will be of council both in the this will be of personnel both in the procurement office and in council's office, and individuals in those offices will be trained to the requirements of full and open competition. And As a preliminary matter, the National Transit Institute's four-course procurement series will be required for each of the offices on a recurring basis every 3 years. The executive leadership team will receive overview training, also performed by the National Transit Institute. Procurement Council will receive training not only through NTI, but in addition will receive training in partnership with the Federal Transit Administration's headquarters office. We will be receiving one-on-one training with FTA. So that is a summary of the management corrective action plan to the findings that we have put forward in the document that you have before you. In addition to that, we are requesting the board adopt a board policy to revise and strengthen the procurement process. The specific changes that we are requesting to the board policy deal with sections 200 and 300 of the procurement policy, which was previously adopted by the board. Section 200 of the policy is to reflect changes to the responsible personnel. Section 201 is to require that the chief procurement officer be elevated as a full member of the executive leadership team. Section 201D is to augment the procurement expertise in the general counsel's office. The policy proposes increasing counsel's the number of counsel dedicated to procurement from 1.5 FTE to 3.5 FTE. Funding to support that recommendation was included in the budget that was adopted by the board last month. In addition, the policy would increase the involvement of counsel in procurement. And let me just describe for you generally the steps to procurement. Essentially, there are seven steps. They begin with planning, initiation. Third step is documentation, which includes technical specifications, a statement of work, and purchase description. The fourth step is solicitation. The fifth step is source selection. The sixth step is modification, and seventh is an option. At the current time, council has been involved only at the fifth step in the process. And under the new policies and procedures that we're recommending, and with the addition of additional council to support the procurement function, council staff would be involved in the procurement function at appropriate milestones, beginning at the planning phase, and then continuing through initiation. It will review documentation at the documentation phase. It will be involved in signing off at solicitation, and again at source selection, which is where it has presently been involved. It will be involved in reviewing any contract modifications and in reviewing any proposed option extensions. We would require council's involvement to that they sign off at particular milestones through the electronic MEAD system at WMATA. But going back to the change to the way I've organized council staff, having a chief procurement council involved and then having additional procurement staff within the specific procurement division of council's office, we envision having council matched up with these procurements really much as the procurement office does now, from cradle to grave, so that you have a council assigned to a procurement from the beginning, from the planning phase and the initiation phase through documentation all the way through the award of the contract. In addition, we have already begun the process of looking and doing a national recruitment for a deputy general counsel with specific expertise in contracting and procurement. So we would have a very high-level counsel in the office that will be overseeing the chief counsel of procurement and the council procurement council staff to ensure that we have increased the capability in council's office. And in particular, we will be looking for one of the additional staff to have the specific expertise in IT procurement to meet the unique challenges that the IT area brings to the procurement process. We're also suggesting there be in the policy changes to Section 300 of the procurement policy. Section 300 is the section that deals with competition requirements. And in Section 300, we are proposing that there be specific and express commitment to full and open competition for those procurements using federal funds but non-federal funds alike. So we are ensuring that on a go-forward basis, we follow the same rules for competition in both federal procurements and non-federal procurements. When we use non-federal sources of funds, the competition rules will be the same as under the federal procurements. The contracting provisions will differ because we won't have Buy America or the DBE or some of the other federal requirements from a contract perspective, but the competition requirements will be the same, and they will be identical for both federal and non-federal procurements. And we believe this will go a long way to making a very strong commitment to full and open competition as the WMATA way of procuring goods and services. Of course, there will be times when other than full and open competition is appropriate and is allowed for under the federal rules and under our local rules, but those circumstances will be elevated and only occur after concurrence of both the general counsel and the chief procurement officer. In addition, there will be a heightened scrutiny given to organizational conflicts of interest. And every single procurement will be required to have an analysis for organizational conflict of interest take place, and that OCI analysis will be documented in the file as a condition of moving the contract forward. There will be strong prohibitions on provisions that unduly restrict competition, and there will be an increased requirement of the use of checklists for all of the essential elements of procurements, including independent cost estimates. All of these issues will be subject to the annual training, which I've already described. We believe that with these changes that have been recommended and that are before you in the actual draft resolution, that those changes to policies, procedures, the staff augmentation and training will provide the appropriate checks and balances through improved coordination between the internal buyers, the procurement staff, and the general counsel's office. So that concludes my remarks on the procurement findings and recommendations in that regard. And now we'll go back to Blair, who will cover the rest of the report's findings.
Thank you, Catherine. This time I'd like to cover the balance of the significant deficiencies not related to procurement or grants management and reporting. The first significant deficiency regarding Metro's Audit Committee oversight of compliance and internal controls is about improving the committee's monitoring to make sure identified control deficiencies are addressed and to ensure committee members have sufficient audit and financial expertise. We have already made significant progress by initiating an internal control process for closing OIG audit findings through defined lines of communication, deadlines, and requirements. Also, Board Audit Committee membership requirements were recently updated to ensure at least one member has expertise in financial matters. Metro has already submitted a request to the General Services Administration to provide us a candidate with financial expertise to fill a board vacancy. Actions planned and committed include making resources available to board members to augment financial acumen through on-call external financial experts, providing board audit awareness training, and establishing a policy outlining board audit committee involvement and oversight to ensure OIG and external audit findings are closed. The next significant deficiency is about the adequacy of controls over managing and disposing of FDA-funded assets, specifically with respect to ensuring inventories are conducted and results reconciled at least once every 2 years. Asset records are properly kept, asset disposal procedures are properly documented, property losses are managed and reported properly, and FDA notification and proceeds remittances are made timely. Since July of last year, significant progress has been made in this area. A consultant conducted an internal controls analysis of our asset management and financial accounting lifecycle processes. As a result, structured policies and procedures for surplus sales and assets disposal documentation have been drafted that apply to our accounting, treasury, and surplus sales operations departments. We've updated our procedures documentation and implemented necessary controls for managing assets disposal and ensuring timely notification to FDA. We will be completing final reconciliation of our 2013 physical inventory and updating the applicable financial system asset management module on the schedule in the report recommendation. We're going to finalize new biennial inventory policies and procedures that ensure FDA compliance with respect to inventory timeliness and reconciliation. We will also complete the work started to complete the cross-departmental process controls for FDA-compliant treatment of property losses, disposals, notification, and reimbursement. The last significant deficiency to cover is about access controls over a financial management system. The report cited inadequate controls over logical access to the financial management system, specifically in the areas of IT policies and procedures, issuing and reviewing access controls, password settings, and segregation of duties within IT administrative roles supporting the financial system application. Our progress to date has been substantial in this area, including developing a draft process for periodic risk assessment reviews for all financial applications, controls over network access for departing employees, confirming adequacy of password complexity policies, and increasing frequency of reviews of user access to financial systems. Actions to be done include ensuring access controls are administered at the financial application as well as network levels, and completing the corresponding process documentation. The final category of findings are the advisory comments. Although responses to the FMO reports, advisory comments are not required, consistent with our acceptance of all findings and our commitment to address all recommendations, we are acting upon all advisory comments with the same responsiveness and diligence as the material weaknesses and significant deficiencies. Our corrective actions include improving procedures for processing exiting employees, modifying organizational reporting relationships, developing a comprehensive risk assessment framework for the authority, and reducing vulnerabilities of our financial management system with respect to change management and contingency planning. For our next steps, we are cooperating with the FDA's requirement for us to manually submit appropriate backup documentation in support of our grant drawdowns for reimbursements. By the end of the week, we will be submitting the authority's official response to the FDA's draft FMO report. Finally, although the date that the final FMO report is issued marks the official start for the 30, 60, and 90-day corrective action plan completion timelines, Metro executives and staffs are already well underway with the activities, changes, and process improvements that will satisfy all of the FDA's recommendations. We will implement all of our corrective action plans on time. Together, we are continuing our internal rebuilding efforts with renewed commitments to full, proper compliance and strong business controls. And this concludes the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I want to thank you for scheduling this as a public discussion. Even though originally this was thought to be a confidential matter, I think it's critically important that the public hear what we're talking about, that our public and our stakeholders know that the board takes these matters seriously and are committed to reform, and we'll be working on this continuously. This is what we've done with respect to safety issues with a degree of success, but I would distinguish the fact that safety issues were apparent to the board and apparent to the public. And much of what we have heard in the FMO report was not transparent and not fully understood. We need to rectify that. Speaking just for myself, as a federal board member and as someone who worked in this field of federal grants management for years, I'm embarrassed by the FMO report, but I'm committed to fixing these issues because I know they are fixable. There is, in fact, a lot that has been done. We've heard about that this morning, and it's a serious effort. But there's a lot more that we have to accomplish to get things right. We need to not just look forward. Looking forward is important. We have new policies, new procedures. We also have to clean up the inventory of issues and do that rapidly. Why do we have to do this? Fundamentally, we have to retain and rebuild credibility with the public and with our funding partners. We will not move forward on our major capital investments without that degree of support, both from the jurisdictions and particularly from the federal government. As we look to the capital plan going forward, we have hopes for significant federal support, including discretionary investments for core capital improvements. We have to have their confidence if we're going to do that. I note that we've received a letter from the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee asking for an immediate report to the Congress on what we're going forward with, and the statement in there that our funding for the coming year is jeopardized by what we see now. We need to remedy that. I think we need to remedy this not just with the idea that we're going to achieve compliance, but rather that we make it clear from the board and senior management what are our values? What is it that drives appropriate behavior beyond just following the rules? We need to remove any thought on the part of the public that, quote, billions of dollars are being wasted. We know that they are not, but we cannot give the assurance. And we need to make it clear to all people in the organization that we don't bend the rules for any purpose. We don't bend the rules to get things done quickly. If we do that, we open the door for anyone to bend the rules for any purpose they might have. We don't want to see that. Most importantly for me, it's not just enough to adopt the new policies, to set dates for new procedures, to set training programs in place. Necessary but not sufficient. We also need to see that all of these things are implemented and carried forward over time. I had the chance for the first time to look at the 2008 Financial Management Oversight Report. Many of the same issues were identified then, and I discovered that all of them had, quote, been corrected, and that the Federal Transit Administration had signed off on those corrections. We can't let that happen again. So I suggest we need to identify the key issues, the key points in the process that will assure us the progress is being made. We need to have tracking systems that are, in fact, noting effective implementation and reporting that to the board, and I believe we should call on our auditors and our own Inspector General to report to us regularly and accurately as to where we are. All of that has to happen to rebuild the confidence that we need to have with our funding partners. I'm committed to doing that. I'm committed to spending as much time as we need to do today to go through the various proposals and recommendations and make them our basis for future action. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I certainly concur with what Mort said, and I think one of the things we will focus on is the board's role in seeing that these things are done, because when you reference the 2008 report and FTA signing off on it, I guess what they signed off on was what should be done to correct them. It's our function as a board to make sure we are in fact doing that and that we have some sort of accountability internally to do that. So I'm looking forward to the discussion as well, because there are some specific things that I think we need to get into.
I just had a clarification question. When FTA's external reviewers did this report, maybe I missed it, but what did they say about the transition from the old way of correcting these grants and the transition period to the new way we're doing it? Did they ever comment that we were doing it right, or was it?
They never commented on it.
So they just left that point, which is really important, I thought. Maybe my fellow board members share this. I certainly do, but that it didn't exist. It was like it wasn't happening, or?
The report is before you. I mean, the report is silent on that. Just to give you some context, when the FML audit was conducted, as it was about a year ago, or a little bit more than a year ago, these are all matters that you see before you that were provided by the people before you here. We were communicating the issues that we had to the FML auditors. Mm-hmm. So we were very much aware of these issues, working through them, mm-hmm. and we're very open and communicative to all the auditors that were on staff. But they it was silent in respect to the transition.
Well, just one final question, Mr. Chairman. Is that the norm in the industry across the country? I mean, FTA has like hundreds of grantees, and what's the standard? The financial standard that FTA.
I don't know. I know that our own Inspector General, Ms. Liu, provides context in many of the audits that she presents. Context is very important so you can have an understanding of the basis, but I do not know what the standard is.
Oh, so in other words, we can make all these changes that you reported. FTA could come back in 5 years and start all over again. Do we get a sign-off? Or check the box with FTA on our financial systems?
I do know this. Part of the standard on the FMO audit is that the once the FMO audit is prepared and done, the corrective action plans are implemented, the auditors are required to come in back to the grantee within 18 months and validate, to Mr. Downey's point, validate that all of the things have been put in place and are acting on a sustainable manner. That is a requirement that is the FTA standard. I do not believe that happened in 2008. That did not happen, actually. I know that. Oh, okay. Okay.
Moving target to me, Mr. Chairman, that maybe we need to think about what kind of a
life's not fair.
I understand that, Mr. Chairman, but some kind of an industry standard that you know, maybe it wouldn't be what our financial systems look like exactly, but it would be something that FBA would approve and embrace and manage over time.
Sergeant.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bolger. You've gone a little further than where I was going when I wanted to raise my question. And I wanted to raise my question in terms of the discussion we've had or the presentation we've had talks about where we were and where we're going and how we can get there. And I think it has been well presented. And I think, to put it in context, I think what we are looking at is a changing organization and a very fluid set of leaders in the organization. And so we see ourselves poised with what we see, a leadership that in place is what we want, with an opportunity to improve upon that in other areas, most particularly this. And I think, Ms. Pett, it was somewhat alluded to in terms that the board is adopting the policy. But if we look back at the 2008 audit, you're correct that the comments were not made in terms of what did we succeed. And the question is, where does that responsibility lie? And I think that responsibility lies with the authority and the executive, and as well as with the board. And so the opportunity to ensure whatever we put in place here and now on this 12-13 report has to have that second part. And I think the questions that we might want to think about is, how do we get to that second part? How do we get to what we think may have been missed? While we may want to know the standards under which other agencies are working, that can be helpful. But the most important standard must be, how will we work in both levels of our responsibility? And that is the board's responsibility. And what sort of timetable, as we make a commitment to FTA and ourselves, that we can make a commitment in terms of the level of the board. And I think that is the part that I would like to
have. Ms. Hines?
Let me build a little on what Kathy said and go back to something that Mort said. You know, this is about how do we, in our governance role, ensure that regardless of who's sitting in our chairs and regardless of who's sitting in your chairs, that the guidance and the expectations around these issues are clear for the future. And so it's, what are those values? I mean, Catherine articulated some of them, you know, absolute commitment to open competition, absolute commitment to eliminating any conflicts of interest, you know, following best accounting practices throughout, whether it's FTA's money or the jurisdiction's money, it doesn't matter. These are the ways that we should approach taking this incredible stewardship responsibility that we have and acting on it for the region. And so I think, you know, that is where we have to, that is the value added of having this conversation with us. You can say what it is that you're going to do from a management point of view, but only we can say, and this is how the region will have confidence that we are using their money to the greatest possible value for our riders and for the region. And so I think that that's, regardless of what the FTA says, regardless of what anybody else says, that is our task, to assure that going forward we are great stewards of the dollars. And so, you know, I think what we're going to hear is us saying, there needs to be, just as we do in safety, there needs to be a very thoughtful approach to what the board's oversight is, and what do those new documents or new displays or dashboards or however you want to talk about that, what is that, what are the key things for us to be monitoring to assure ourselves that even after FTA comes in and says, yes, you did everything in that corrective plan, we still have the capacity to monitor that we are using the money in the most efficacious way for this, for the region. So,
Mr. Nichols.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. I want to align myself particularly with the comments that that Mort made earlier. I think that they are, and actually all the comments that have been made, but I think that they go to the core of what our responsibility is, and collectively, it does emanate from what our values are. The specific question that I wanted to ask or comment really goes to more of the specifics of the proposal, and if it's timely to raise that question, I'd like to do that. We've talked about controls, policies, and procedures, and step one is to get all of those in place, and we're building that. We're putting together a manual, and we want to see a specific date for when that manual, procedures manual, will be completed, and I'd like to know what that date is. But in addition to that, the process of compliance is, I haven't heard enough discussion around that, enough specificity around it. We've talked about that we've hired a compliance officer within the corporate management infrastructure. So I want to understand completely what the role and responsibility of the compliance officer is and the span of responsibility throughout the life cycle of our expense. We've talked about compliance within the Office of General Counsel, that the new officer or the new responsibility within the Office of General Counsel will have some aspects of compliance in as you described it, the cradle to grave for the contracting, which is from the time a solicitation is conceived through the time that the contract is executed. So what is the process of compliance management? Who has specific accountability for compliance? And I define compliance as different from the audit function and the look back. Who has day-to-day accountability for adhering to controls and procedures, and how is that process managed on an ongoing basis?
Could I say, but let me, we're dealing with a, I appreciate Dalvin's concern about the broader issues. One of the frustrations about dealing with a limited technical review by the federal agency who provides part of our capital funding is that by necessity, by law, by regulation, they have a process that deals with the things that they are concerned with. They have laid them out, and we have a defined public responsibility to respond to those. Like our experience in safety, when the NTSB and others laid out a set of concerns that we had to deal with, we dealt with those in a orderly fashion, but we also put other issues on the table that went beyond the National Transportation Safety Board's recommendations, like fatigue management, as, for instance, where we're trying to, in effect, create a safety regime that is unique in the American transit industry. I think we do ourselves a disservice if we try to struggle with the right overall structure for procurement, the management of procurement, accountability, within this audit, within this FMO audit itself, because it is of limited design. There are serious questions here that are not raised by the FMO audit. How did our external auditor go 5 years without a single management letter about any deficiencies or serious material deficiencies? When the FMO could cite six of them, how do we better, as a board, define accountability in areas beyond what the FMO has put on the table? For instance, small and disadvantaged business management and accountability is not on the table in this review. It seldom is because it's a complex issue. But it's something that the authority has to make as serious an effort about as this procurement reform, and that's about accountability, about what is delivered, how it's delivered, who it's delivered to. It doesn't talk about the information that the board gets by contract. While the general manager has authority to execute contracts, what is the information flow framework for the board to understand what has been approved and what the impacts are about decision-making and accountability? We have a task I believe, as a board, that is beyond this instant FMO review. I think we have to spend all of our time and energy to get this FMO document completed, professionally signed, and over to the Federal Transit Administration. And we have to assure ourselves that we have in place the controls to make sure that what happened in 08 apparently was a lot of we committed to a lot of things, and apparently in good faith we said we were going to do them, and we didn't for a whole variety of reasons. And so we dug ourselves a hole, and here we are trying to dig out again. Implementation is one of the key questions I think the board has to wrestle with going forward, because the Federal Transit Administration will check on us for implementation, not only at 90 days, but probably at 180 days and a year to double check performance as part of the review necessary to get full automated grants review back online. So we have a defined task about the FMO response. And beyond this, I think Alvin is raising some significant questions about the broader issues of the board's responsibility and accountability for being as serious about procurement as we were about safety, which is an ongoing review process with the staff about issues of management, control, accountability, and they can't be addressed in this FMO.
Well, Tom, I respectfully but strongly disagree with one aspect of what you're describing, and that is that I'm not discussing the ongoing at the moment. Much of what we're discussing today and those responses, it has to do with structure of how we are organizing ourselves to ensure that we are capable of executing these responses. And the question that I'm raising is very specific to organizational structure and capability to perform. The ability to deliver on this has everything to do with our ability to be compliant, to know that we are compliant, and someone having specific responsibility for being accountable, for ensuring that we are on an ongoing basis doing this. I want to understand where the responsibility for managing compliance will rest. I want to know if there's a conflict or a complementary aspect of the discussion that was held here today, and that has everything to do with our competency in responding to the report immediately and for the ongoing. So maybe we just have a semantic difference in terms of understanding on that, but I think this particular point that I'm raising is very important for me to hear an explanation of, and I'd like to hear that and to know how it sits in
the
framework.
Right now, the guy who is responsible for implementing this stuff is the general manager. Without reservation and without doubt, and if he can't do this and assure the board on a regular basis of the implementation steps and the compliance and planning steps that are necessary to get this done, then we have the wrong general manager.
That's not the question I'm raising, Tom. Hear me out well. We have discussed at a high level some very specific aspects of structural change that are proposed to be implemented to address the deficiencies that we have, including restructuring our general counsel's office in terms of responsibilities with respect to procurement and process management. We have discussed the hiring of a chief of a compliance officer, and those aspects of compliance go directly to the board responsibility of knowing and being satisfied that the infrastructure that we are accountable for is sufficient. And I don't want to get into the business of micromanaging the general manager. Wouldn't dare do that. But these are core aspects of my understanding of how we are proposing to organize ourselves to execute successfully. And I think it's a question that is fair to ask and deserves a response. And I don't think it compromises the general manager or any other aspect of what we're talking about here right now. And I'd like an answer to that question.
The one issue that is on the table, because it is part of the follow-on resolution, is the status of the chief procurement officer, and whether or not, as a member of the ELT, whether or not there is adequate separation from the functions within the CFO of the procurement processes itself, that's adequate from a board perspective about separation of function.
Tom, beyond that, the general manager.
Beyond that, it is very difficult, given the structure that we have set up, about the general manager's accountability for being the chief executive officer of the authority, to be able to get into a detailed.
This is not a detail, Tom. Let me reshape the question, and I'd like to speak for myself in reshaping the question. We have a number of specific deficits that have been highlighted by the FMO. Among the responses to those deficits are structural change within the Office of General Counsel that includes specific responsibility for compliance. There is a specific change, as I hear it, within the Office of the General Manager for a compliance officer. My understanding is that compliance officer will ensure, or at least I want to understand, that we do follow the procedures and the controls. I would like to understand the scope of responsibility of the compliance officer and how that relates to the compliance responsibilities within the Office of the General Counsel. That's an appropriate question. It doesn't undermine where we are, timeliness or otherwise, and it's a question I want to answer.
But it's not a part of the response to the FMO.
Absolutely it is. It's been described this morning as...
No, the definition of internal responsibilities is not a part.
Tom, we failed in our execution, and I want to understand what the mechanism is. Compliance is a business, different from audits and different from investigations. I want an understanding of how we perceive that. I want to answer to my question.
Well, look, Catherine has been trying to have a word.
I only wanted to bring us back to process, and I think we'll get a chance to have the same discussion if we get back to process.
I'd like an answer to my question. That's simply...
And here's what I was about to say. We have two resolutions here, and most importantly, the second resolution talks to those controls and specifically, I think, to your issue. And if there are some changes or some clarity, do we want to do it through that, or do we want to just continue?
I'd simply like the general counsel and the general manager to answer questions with respect to comments that they made about structural change that involved compliance and compliance responsibility. That's all I'm asking. I think we are making this much more substantive in terms of a diversion, I want to answer to my question. It's simply that.
I'm comfortable in going your direction. I was just going to put the resolution on the floor, and we could discuss it, and we would put it in that. But that's not necessary for me to get.
Mr. Sarles, whichever of you.
Let me start, and then Carol can add. As you know, about a year ago, maybe a little less, we launched an effort to look at an enterprise risk management approach to managing this place. We've hired outside expertise to help us do that. I think they've interviewed board members to get their input. And we are developing a structure that looks at what are our highest risks, how we should address it, and out of that will come a recommendation for overall corporate compliance with regard to where our biggest risks are. In the interim, until we get there, Carol Kissel has hired, about a year ago, a compliance officer to operate within the CFO's office to look at compliance issues such as we're dealing with today, and I'll let her talk about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the gap that I had seen a year ago was that we did not have what I am familiar with, which is an internal auditor, an internal compliance review person, who would actually work to ensure that the policies and procedures that are laid out under a company are followed. And these are done not as a this internal compliance officer advises management where the weaknesses are, and then we work to fix them. So it's very much a tool that management uses in order to ensure compliance. That's one step that we took, knowing that we were taking this larger step. So we have a compliance officer in place now. The OIG acts as an external auditor for the board in a very different capacity. So that was where we're looking. The enterprise risk management, as Mr. Starles indicated, is probably going to recommend an organizational structure with respect to compliance, and that should be forthcoming soon.
Discussion from the general counsel with respect to that matter.
Sure, go ahead. And then Mr. Dyke.
The structural change to counsel's office I made within the first 90 days of arriving. So that change was made immediately, basically. It was effective October 1st. So again, what I did at that time was to flatten the organization. I eliminated pyramid, I guess, and now have chief counsels with responsibility over subject matter areas, and each of those chiefs is held accountable in their performance to serving the area of their responsibility. So I have a chief counsel of contracts and procurement, a chief counsel of finance and administration, a chief counsel of governance and HR, a chief counsel of litigation, and so on and so forth. So that structure is in place. I identified it immediately, and I implemented it on October 1st. What the additional change we're making now is to add staff, to augment the staff within the structure. So one of the changes will be to add back a deputy general counsel that will have very specific and very high-level experience in procurement. And in addition, we'll hire some additional procurement counsel. And of those three new hires, one of them will have expertise in IT procurement.
Just to add to that, I mean, what Catherine is describing is to strengthen the compliance with regard to procurement. Previously, the practice had been, when the board was approving contracts and the general counsel reported to the board, the general counsel was the gatekeeper, as Catherine described. Towards the end of the process, would review the procurement records and decide whether or not it complied with all the rules and regulations. Obviously, that has not worked as well as it should have. So what Catherine is describing to you is to increase the compliance effort in the procurement efforts in the procurement area so that at steps along the way, there's an assurance of compliance along the way with regard to the steps that are required rather than waiting just to the end.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
First off, I think all the issues that we've got on the table are clearly issues we're going to have to resolve as a board. However, this is just the first step. We're not going to address all these issues here today. What we're trying to do is adopt a framework for where we ought to be going so we can respond to the FTA and get our response in. But this is going to have to be an ongoing process with the board. For example, when I mentioned earlier, what is our appropriate role as far as checks and balances, and where do we play a role in seeing if there's compliance, what's happening with procurement, this whole discussion about where procurement ought to be and how independent. That's a discussion I think we need to have going forward, but we need to be focused now on adopting these two resolutions so we can respond to the FTA. So with that in mind, I would like to move adoption of the resolution related to grant management policy to at least get that in front of the board and have some discussion and move this forward.
Could I make one other point before we do that? If this is an outward-looking, I understand that a significant part of this has to be directed at the Federal Transit Administration. We have stakeholders, we have the public, we have a whole bunch of people who find it difficult to wade through the technical parts of this. It is important, I believe, no matter how we craft the response to the Federal Transit Administration, that there is a layman's document here that you lay beside it that is in pretty plain English, that is an understandable definition of the deficiency and an understandable response from the authority about what the authority is going to do in pretty clear language that everybody can understand. Compliance for dummies, perhaps. But it struck me going through the PowerPoints, and it struck me going through some of the drafts, that I know these are highly technical issues, but it doesn't help all of our other stakeholders understand. And I know simplicity and transparency is not as easy as it looks in areas like this, but I think it's really important about making the effort to have these understandable for everybody who feels they have a need to understand what's going on, and that includes all of the people behind us at the jurisdiction level and interested public and other stakeholders. So a plea about having this be translated into regular speak as well as the compliance that we're trying to put together for the review with the Federal Transit Administration.
Can we now open this up to see if there's a second to my motion?
Yes. Second. Motion made and seconded. This is for both resolutions or one at a time?
Grant management. I'll take them one at a time. So
grants management and, okay, open for discussion.
I would not be satisfied to jump directly to these resolutions without having some conversation about the various management responses.
Well, that's fine. That's why I made the motion, so we at least get into the specifics of the resolution. So that's what you have to say is very appropriate.
To the yeah. resolution eventually. That's fine. I just think we need to look at the various responses where we believe there needs to be change or improvement.
Which ones?
I would start at the beginning.
Start at the beginning.
Page 32. We all start at the grant responses.
All right.
I think it's page 32.
On material weakness finding 2.2. The issue appears to be, again, a lack of coordination between the various reporting systems that go to the Federal Transit Administration. And I'd like to ask that in addition to the corrective action suggested that we get frequent assurance that these reports have been coordinated and are consistent.
Ward, if you could reference where you're looking at.
I'm looking at what we were sent as the management responses.
Page number 24. On that, if we could all.
24 of the, in here. Yeah, I'm working off a paper copy.
Yeah.
Oh.
There's a special book called FMO Responses.
3 of 71.
It's on page 3 of 71. I would just wonder, I know, Mr. Downey, you jumped to your list. Are we going to start at the beginning, or it would make more sense to me if we just, I do have a question about the one that precedes this one, so.
Okay. Well, now I think the way I'd like to see this is just take up each of these numbered recommendations one at a time and move on.
So I don't know, I guess are we asking staff to respond to these suggestions as we go? I want to make sure we're all clear what we're doing. So why don't you go ahead and respond to Moritz, and then I'll go back to the question I have on the one before.
That was on 2.2. Yeah. Regular report that, as to the reconciliation process.
So, looking at the previous one, 2.1, which is, this is the budget control one, and this is an area where it seems to me there that this is a ripeness for a board, some kind of an annual board report, perhaps on the number of grants that are open and when you expect to close them or something like that, so that I'm kind of, in my mind, I'm looking toward building a dashboard that will let you come back to us with key reports in a timely manner. And I don't know the frequency. I don't too much. It doesn't need to be too much, but some way that that comes back to us.
We could add that to the monthly financial report. We have a certain aspect of that now, but we can build it up to include the detail.
That would be monthly is far more than I expected, so that's terrific. Mm-hmm. And
yeah. I mean, I think if we added to the resolution a commitment that that would be done and at least get a sample in a few months as to what it would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's our basis for
right. And we may then, as we work on this resolution, we may be adding a section that says further resolve that the board will receive these kinds of things so that it's memorialized. I'm sorry, Ms. Hutchins.
I think process-wise, that is, I think, our next step. That is, what place and where will the board go? I think unless we have some problems with the corrective actions that are part of the grant management part, do we want to have a general statement in terms of the role the board will have in terms of its monitoring, rather than today, will we find our way through including all of those that we want? So I would think that if we want to move forward with the resolution, maybe the general statement is that the board come back to review all of those actions to see what role it must play in terms of its responsibility of monitoring and oversight.
Yes, I mean, I was envisioning a process with the staff to define
right, but we could go through, yes.
What elements would go into a regular, if it was grants, how many are open, how many are closed,
right.
How much has been drawn down, if it's mm-hmm. procurements, how many have been sole sourced, how many have done, just yeah. What the key items are.
Yeah,
and we could work that out.
Yeah, well, that's what I was trying to get at. Is that if
I don't think we should try to do it today.
No, that's the whole point, is, and I think Kathy is saying that if we put in a whereas that says that we will work as a board to figure out what our role is, and that's why I said this is step one. We're not doing everything today. And so unless you've got a problem with what's in the resolution, I would suggest more if you're okay with it. Okay.
Okay.
So we need to give ourselves a timeline then to
yeah.
get to an agreement on that and in
yeah.
some
fine.
Manner within 60 or 90 days, you know, management and the board will come to agreement on
yeah.
how we're going to monitor these. Maybe that's what
fine.
Should be in the resolution.
And I'll start tackling and then you can correct me. And I think maybe there is a whereas clause that the board our response to the board's response to the FMO is to assure that our monitoring responsibilities are equally addresses the oversight given by the authority, and therefore that we come back with a opportunity to address all of those correction actions to respond to the board.
That we receive sufficient information in order to exercise
that
our oversight responsibilities.
And our staff can make that
sufficient and structured information. I had some questions on 2.3, which is controls over procurement. And I believe that if we implemented all of the recommendations in here, we would have a very good procurement system. What I'd like to know, perhaps not in the context of the FMO, but in the general context of management, what action would management expect to take when there were violations of the principle of competition?
That, to me, gets to performance.
Yeah.
And that gets to how dealing with the personnel issue is attached to performance.
Yeah. But it would not just be these are the rules and no one is enforcing the rules.
No.
If there's an indication, for example, of splitting procurement to get to a simplified procurement level, there would be consequences.
Right.
That's all I need to know. 3.1, which
Excuse
deals
me.
With audit committee. Yes.
I'd like to ask one question here. I agree this is a very thorough laying out of our process. The question is there how do we, I guess, how do we think about the attestation part of this, which is the piece that our IG does related to procurement? I honestly don't know how it fits into the overall approach. I don't know whether it needs to be here or not, but it is something that I think as a board member I've heard a number of times related to procurement. And so it's just, it really is a question of understanding for me.
Let me just define what that attestation means for the audience in layperson's language. But it's basically the when we do a procurement, part of that procurement has typically labor rates, overhead rates, and things of that nature. As part of the procurement guidelines, those need to be tested against a standard competition and ensuring that those rates are an accurate reflection of the vendor's overhead structure so we can assure that we're being billed for the right thing, basically. And so the attestations that are performed by the OIG, by Ms. Liu and her group, she does a sampling of vendor contracts, and based on that, she tests those rates on a certain basis.
And
Helen's there. And so they're not necessary. They should not be put in here because it's an activity that is under the OIG's purview.
Okay, the attestations we do are at the request of the Director of Procurement. And we do them on sole source contracts. We also do them on claims, and we do them on modifications. And what we do is we look at that pricing. There's an FTA requirement, and what we do is we look at the pricing information to make sure it's reasonable. And that's basically what we do. And we issue a report, and we give it to procurement and say that when you negotiate the contract, you can use this in your negotiation. And some of the things that we might question or ask for an adjustment, if it's a cost that's not supported, sometimes we might have individuals that charge us for activities that have nothing to do with the contract. It could be to a retreat. It could be lobbying. I remember one time it was something on advertising that they want to charge us, or if it's unsupported. Their calculation oftentimes might be on overhead, and they're pulling numbers from left and right, and they can't support it. Those are the things we would question and say, when you negotiate, you might want to adjust that down.
Keep going.
Time to drive this.
You're on a roll.
I'm on a roll. I'd like to move to 3.1, Audit Committee Oversight. So I think this is an area where we have not done as well as we should have in the past. I'm concerned with the language in the first corrective action plan that says audit findings cited by IG or others are addressed timely. That's important. Two, if management does not agree with a finding or recommendation, the audit committee will be informed so that it may determine an appropriate resolution. I think that should be stronger. I think if there is disagreement, it's an obligation of the board to resolve that agreement. So the verb should not be may, but should be will. Should be shall. Yeah. And the process for doing that, I'm not sure how we work it out, but I don't think we should leave ourselves the back door that we'll just ignore the disagreement. And the third, finding a recommendation will not be closed out until management has fully addressed the board-approved corrective action plan.
Mr. Chairman, on this particular one, I actually... to me, this is about more than, we get audit results from any number of different places, and what I've come to understand is that they're not all of the same seriousness, just like all of our corrective action plans related to safety are not all of the same danger to our riding public. And And this is a place where I would really like to see the agency move towards some sort of analysis of risk and some sort of creating of a grid, as we've done in safety, so that the board can monitor and it all kind of collapses in a place that we can actually keep track of. And while the result, you know, what Steph is talking about here kind of hints at that, I think it's stronger to say we learned some things when we did that safety thing. And I think we should say we learned it. We think it applies here.
I suppose a bit hazard analysis is a risk analysis.
Yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think that the premise there is one, we're aware of everything that is on the docket, but we're focusing our efforts on things that are of great concern.
And we're less worried about things that take longer if they're less risky. So I just would really like to see staff strengthen this one with that reference to what we've learned about managing CAPS in the safety arena.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, can I just for the record note that board member Hampshire Callan had to leave, but she wanted to make sure that I made the point, and you gave me the sort of the open door about risk management. That she thinks, and we talk about that later on in here, but that she thinks that is very, very important, and to the extent we really go all out and we've already started a process, that will play into some of these very items we're talking about. So I think it pretty much buttresses what Mary says. So just wanted to make sure Artis's point was in the record.
I'm finished on 3.1. I have no comments on 3.2.
I think the only comment... I think Mort and I have both had conversations with various officials at the federal level to convey in advance the concern and request that is listed on 3.1 on the second bullet, that the United States government consider the appointment of a person with the qualifications specified within the FMO report so that this would not be either a surprise or...
Are we clear that we're requesting the federal government to do that because at the moment that's where there's a vacancy?
Yes.
Yes.
This does not become a federal...
No.
Because the same obligation is in the statutory language for all of the jurisdictions, but the current vacancy is a federal vacancy. 3.2? I have nothing. 3.3, I have nothing. 3.4? Jumping ahead here.
Go for it.
3.4 deals with the access controls on financial management systems, and I might be able to deal with this offline, but I'm not sure I understand the issue of system administrators having control when a program is being migrated from development to production. That was the concern the FMO raised. I'm not sure how this language deals with it. I assume it's...
Kevin, you want to come up and address that?
Yeah, what they're referring to is that when you're moving a program from a development to production, sometimes you have development personnel who sit on both sides of the equation, so both sides of the transaction. Or if you have database administrators, they may be managing two sides of a database in terms of transaction management. And the way we manage that is with logs. And that's it's pretty typical in the industry. But I think the concern was that, well, if you have a person sitting on both sides of the transaction, they theoretically could manipulate that information.
Yeah, I understand what you want to achieve. I just want to be sure that either the progress to date or the proposals close that loop.
Yes, exactly. Right.
And,
so,
and the other
Snowden issue.
Yes, right. The other in the progress to date with respect to password policy, your response is you've reviewed the current policy and believe it meets current industry best practices. As I read the FMO comment, They weren't saying it was a bad policy. They didn't disagree with it. They just said it wasn't being implemented.
That it wasn't being maintained. Yeah, that is correct.
We should be focused on the implementation.
Yeah, not every application. We have many applications, many databases, you know, in our environment, and not all of them enforce the policy automatically. So in some cases, the policy has to be maintained manually.
3.5? 3.5 has to do with job order contracts. The corrective action is saying that the federal clauses will be included when an offer for services is issued on a task order, as opposed to modifying the master contract. Does that achieve the same purpose? I see and head nodding. Would future job order contracts be awarded with the federal requirements in the master contract? Okay, so this is a transitional issue. The other question I have on the job order contracts is how are the controls going to deal with assigning work under a job order contract that is really out of the scope for which that contract was issued?
So it's intended that there will be a thorough review before any job order contract task order is issued prior to an offer for services going out to the vendors. The idea would be to make a determination whether the job order contractor in his capacity as a general contractor really has the necessary skills to be able to produce the actual work offered. If not, then obviously we will be moving to full and open competition.
Item in the FMO report of a contract, yes. A job order contractor being awarded a piece of work and having to subcontract 99% of it.
Correct.
What's the reference to 20% that's in there? Is that an expectation or?
No, the current job order contract stipulates that the prime contractor or the job contractor that we are actually in contract with has to perform 20% of the work of the task. In that instance, that they perform 99, obviously they were in violation of that.
And under the job order contracts, for clarity in my mind, when you go out, do you get a sort of a bench of possible contractors?
So we have a bench currently of three.
So you have three or four people who could do this particular type of work, and then there is competition at the task order level?
Correct. So
and then one of the things you'd be reporting to us on a regular basis is this real competition, or did three people get on the bench and one person went up to bat every time?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Because that, I think, can be abusive, if not also, sort of gets away from the principle of competition.
Yes.
In informing up the teams to do job order contracts, do you make sure that there aren't, in fact, all the players with one sweatshirt on?
Correct. We do. They're all separate and distinct currently, and they would all be invited to come
that
and do
that has not been true in the past.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask a couple more, don't leave, Heather. how do you decide how big the pool will be for job order and how often do you compete to get in the pool?
Right. So this current contract that we had intent of keeping it to four vendors max. We ended up only contracting with three. In the construction space, when you hear job order contracting, contractors typically don't want this, big contractors wouldn't want this work. So you're not getting in this area the Turners, the Clarks, because this is smaller work. There's a lot of it. They have to, you know, be able to engage quickly. So we only took three.
Mm-hmm.
Going out, again, we would be looking particularly at identifying specific trades that we might need, which we didn't do this time. It was kind of just a general contracting contract. By getting specific trades that we know from an organizational perspective moving forward that we might need electrical or specific plumbing or, you know, track fastening and things specific to the railroad, we'd be able to build a better bench.
Sure. And how long is the current contract in force for with
so
three?
So the current contract we have actually will expire on June 30th.
Okay.
We will need to make a decision. We have one more option available for another 12 months or make the decision to actually go out and resolicit.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, what is the condition that you use for disadvantaged businesses on the job contracting?
So the current contract requires that there be a 23% of disadvantaged businesses participation in the work that they are actually going to do.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is an area that I think would benefit from thinking through how the board can get information in an orderly manner, and whether or not the bench, if you will, actually is sometimes used on reimbursable projects or not. I think this is an area we would probably all like to understand better, not only about federal money, but about local money as well. It's just an area I think more sunshine is a good idea.
And could I also ask, do we use a similar process with respect to other professional services?
We actually do. We use it for, we have a similar process for IT services.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were also contemplating an additional contract for things to support other admin services. Sometimes people need, you know, more than clerical. Sometimes people
or
need engineering or accountants.
I think we need to know what all the areas that are
that we have a pooled contract
under this.
Okay.
Both for information and then in some way recording.
The other thing I want to add to this discussion is that job contracts were used heavily to get us back up to steam.
Sure.
What Rob and Rodrigo and I have had discussion on is, okay, we've done that, but there are areas that we should be able to do the engineering first and go out to a regular bid, especially now that we've gained some experience. So that will be taken into account as we look at the next round of job contracts.
And as we talk about oversight, that would be something you could report to us.
Yeah.
On how you're doing.
Okay.
3.6. Controls over indirect costs and encumbrances. I just had one question under the corrective action plans. FFRs are, to ensure that FFRs are reported by someone other than the preparer, is that someone in another department or just somebody sitting next to the person?
In another department.
I think we should clarify that. Were there 4.1, which was procedures for payroll and human resources. I read the FMO report as concerned with a lot of different transactions, promotions, et cetera, all of the responses had to do with terminations. I just wonder if something was missed here.
That's Tonya.
Yeah, we shouldn't take somebody who isn't working here anymore.
Absolutely.
Right.
Making sure the management understands their responsibilities and sort of those policies followed. In addition to that, we just went live with a new upgrade of SuperCost. We are working out
And I said, since the FMO report was more broad than termination, I think the response should say we're working on the other elements
of that.
At the bottom, that the additional audit reports monitoring time and initiation of personnel act transactions, including not relevant to employee transfer, part of reorganization to employee structure change. All of those things are in the same.
Thank you. The next is organizational structure. And I know there are others who have concern about that as well. And if not, I'll raise my concerns. Recognizing from both the FMO and Thompson Coburn, we've done well in some areas, we've not done well in others. One could attribute some of the lesser less stellar performances to an issue of organizational conflict. Anytime someone is being asked to do work with particular rules to be followed and they're being asked by the person who controls their evaluations and the like, there is at least the implicit issue of pressure being placed on them. I think the idea of an independent review by counsel's office helps, but I'm not sure it takes us as far as we need to go. I did look at the FTA guidance on this issue with respect to autonomy. It's very interesting. So your perfect system would have procurement reporting to the board.
It's most everything.
Which I said that was far from perfect, but they do argue for the greatest degree of autonomy to allow the procurement personnel to give unbiased consideration to principles and requirements. They offer various solutions, I think, in order of priority, first to the CEO, then to departments that report to administrative or financial, but with independence of primary internal customers, and where either administration or finance does so many things that they become a primary customer, I think we have to address that situation.
Yeah, and Mort, could I? I'm sorry.
If you don't. As you point out, the FPA, you know, basically says you should separate the primary operating groups from the procurement. And here, you know, that has always been done in terms of bus, not, I can't say always, as long as I know, bus and rail, and as well as construction and engineering. Those are the primary areas for procurement. Recently, I had moved Metro Access into out of the operating into administration for the specific purpose of not going through the problem apparently this organization had a few years ago in terms of contracting for access services in that transition. I wanted a new business model and a way to do it. And that was accomplished. And now I've moved that now back to operating because the operating end, as talented as Rob and his predecessors are, just had too much on their plate to be able to address that. So I've now moved that back. That really leaves us with the two issues within the DGMA and the CFO area. One is the new electronics procurement. That's a major project. And the other is IT.
And IT procurements and system procurements are very complicated and risky.
Extraordinarily so, as we see inside and outside of Metro. So if, in terms of dealing at a policy level, if the board wanted to say that those groups, major projects and remaining major procurement activities like in the IT should be separate from the chain of command, that would be very clear, and we could do that. It would leave a couple options then, in my view. One is to move procurement out from under the CFO, the other, and leave the others in, the project and the IT.
Okay.
The other, but that's still, you leave them fairly close to all the financial functions. The other is to do the reverse, and is to move those two functions, the IT and the electronic payment system out, a major project, and leave the procurement within that remaining framework, which is basically a financial framework, and is more oriented towards controls and review. Obviously, everybody does some procurement. Even procurement does procurement for their own benefit, but that further reduces the risk, and that's, as a policy merit, that's why it suggests.
I think you've heard our concern, at least mine, I think others do, and I think in line with our general philosophy that you should have the authority to organize if you organize and see fit. Either of those would work for me, but I would say up to you.
Yeah, well, that's the point I was going to get at, because I've had some discussions about this as well, and my thinking would be maybe if we wanted to change none to the board, we'll work with the general manager to see what sort of functional arrangement is needed in order to address some of the concerns that we've raised, the chain of command, and then we would just figure out what's the best way to go as opposed to trying to put something in here that speaks to that.
Yeah. I just didn't want to have us endorsing this one.
Right. No, that's a very good point, because I feel as strongly as you do about that. Yeah.
That's the last comments that I have.
Specific, it would need specific language.
In the FMO report.
In the resolution.
I'm sure Catherine's working on it already.
Yeah. They're already working on that? Okay.
Next one is risk assessment, and I guess Artis's comments have been raised. I had none. Nor risk assessment of financial management, nor contingency planning.
Which page are you looking at now?
Which page are you looking
we're
at?
We're now down to 4.5.
That's picked up where?
That's 4.5, which is
That's 40.
48.
48. Okay.
Forty-six was where you had raised Artis's issue.
Right.
It's also to Alvin's definitional issue about relationship issues around risk assessment and risk management.
Yeah. And controls.
And controls.
Okay. I'm done. If you want to move to the resolutions.
So we have both resolutions now in front of us. But those corrections in addition.
Instead of taking them both, why don't we take them one at a time?
Okay. Well, and I already moved the one as it relates to grants management policy, and my distinguished colleague who just returned seconded. So we're ready to vote, I think.
Motion has been made and seconded to consider the adoption of the grants management policy resolution. Discussion.
So this would include, as finally adopted, language reporting.
The language which is currently being drafted as we speak.
Yes. Right. So,
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Alvin, just one question. As for the procedures manual, what's the deliverable timing on that?
So the board resolution would be the first chapter of that grant management procedures manual. We are already working on assembling that the various chapters for that manual. The deadline in the FML report is 30 days after that we transmit that to FTA, 30 days after the release of the final report. So it would be in the early June time.
This is the actual manual itself. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a specific question about this. We're approving through the resolution the policy that's attached. And so I looked at 201A, which lays out the board's responsibility. And I thought, well, that seems okay. That kind of fits with what I think. And then I went on a little bit further, about two pages further. We come to 403, project budget amendments. And it says, the authority's project budgets can be modified as a result of board member amendments to the capital budget reprogramming, et cetera, kind of goes on. But amendment is not one of the things that's listed in the board's responsibility, because it talks about that we've authorized the general manager to do all these things. So perhaps there's a legal explanation that I'm just missing in my reading, but I do want to make sure that we're clear. At a certain level, contract amendment is the board's responsibility. We delegate up to a certain amount, right, to you, or am I remembering a different board?
No, that's not confused. Contract amendment with the budgeting authority. The budgeting authority, I have a certain limit, which I want at 5%, and then above that, the board does. Contract amendments are part of the contracting authority, which the board gave to me a couple years ago.
So are you, this is budget amendment, which says the authority's project budgets can be modified as a result.
Right.
And the first item, which is grants, we approve grants management policy. So what you're saying is, I'm confused, and so. It's a grants management policy.
Maybe I'll step through both this and the next section, and maybe it'll help clarify the process. So the section 403 talks about project budget amendments and capital program budget amendments. And after the board's annual adoption of the capital budget, there are really three ways that the budget can change. One is an amendment by the board. The second is reprogramming that is reviewed and approved by the general manager, and the third is changes within a specific project budget, within the various activities of the project budget. Board amendments to the overall capital budget or to a specific project within the capital budget is typically if there is a change in the total program. So a new funding source becomes available, a new project is added to the program. Changes between projects are typically handled within the general manager's reprogramming authority.
And
changes within a project are handled by management of the project in consultation with OMB.
Okay. And the second item where the manager moves it between projects, there's notice to the board at
yes.
a certain
yes,
level,
you
right?
Yes, there is. You have a regular report on that.
Yeah.
And it goes above a certain limit, then you have to approve it.
Then we have to
You've
approve
done that.
It. So that's a project amendment, but that would not be a grant?
So with this Section 403 in combination with Section 404 is really the grant management component of this. What we are attempting to do is outline that as there is a project expense budget change, there should be a corresponding project funding source change. Sometimes that involves a grant revision or amendment, and so Section 403 is really to identify the ways that a project expense budget can change that would prompt a change in the project funding source plan.
If I could just follow on to Ms. Hines' question. These policies and procedures are being set forth for the federally funded grants. So there's a broader set of issues with respect to our total capital program, but I read these procedures as particularly applicable to managing the federal grants.
That's the primary purpose, yes.
Yeah.
But capital budget revisions is part
everything.
Of the previous board resolution
yeah. right.
in terms of my limitations and what we
so
have.
So this
to
takes
do.
It down to another level.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had one other question. In 201, with the board responsibilities, board is responsible for approving the policies and approving deviations from the policies. And I just wanted to ask how deviations would be brought to our attention, what might they be?
So I think our intent we'll need to address this in more specificity in the procedures themselves, but I think our intent would be if we encountered a situation where there was a need to deviate from these grant management policies, that we would alert the board
before
taking that action.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's really staking out the fact that we don't want you to deviate
right.
without bringing something back to us. So if a conscious effort to deviate occurred, that would be a violation.
Yes.
Thank you.
Really, I'm seeking confirmation on one particular matter. With respect to resources at your disposal to implement the procedures that would follow on from this policy, those are within your available resources to respond?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on the resolution as
amended,
slightly amended, as amended.
Do we? Can somebody read us the new language?
Yes, that's a good idea.
Yeah, could read the amended language.
My understanding is that there is one change requested to the resolution itself. It would be a new resolved paragraph that would read: resolved that the board of directors. Directs the general manager and chief executive officer to report key measures as agreed upon by the board of directors and the general manager on a periodic basis.
Key measures with respect to grants management.
I thought you wanted the opportunity to develop exactly what you wanted reported back.
Resolved. Yeah, I think we wanted it to come back, you know, to present a plan of action within
right.
a certain number of days so that the board and the general manager can agree on the key measures that will be used to monitor the implementation of this resolution, basically.
And just, I would recommend one minor word change, irregular as opposed to periodic.
That's fine.
Depending on the part of the country you're from, it might mean the same thing.
All in following through the principle of trust but verify.
Trust but verify.
Okay.
Keeping honest people honest.
Okay, so is my motion ready to be voted?
Is that is that language acceptable as amended?
Do we actually have words?
Did you get that? We're going to need to go over it one more time to make sure we have it exactly correct. So, resolved that the Board of Directors directs the General Manager and Chief Executive Officer to report on key performance measures related to grant management. What did you want?
I think you need to say something like resolve the Board of Directors directs the General Manager to present a plan to monitor the grants management policy within the next, 60 days.
Well, let's do it right. Do it simultaneous with when we have the policy.
Yeah, so whatever that is. And
by June 30th.
So that key performance measures can be adopted by the board.
And monitored by the board.
Adopted. Well, adopted and monitored, yeah.
What's the time period?
They said June 30.
Okay, so I'm going to read it back.
Okay.
And Phil's writing this down. Okay. Resolved that the Board of Directors directs the General Manager, Chief Executive Officer, to present a plan to monitor the grant management policy by June 30 so that key performance measures can be adopted and monitored by the Board.
Thank you. Okay.
That I don't hear any other amendments. Hearing none, I would entertain a vote, recognizing that Ms. Porter will be voting for Mr. Goldman and Mr. Bolger will be voting for Ms. Bowser. All those in favor of adopting the resolution as amended signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Thank you.
I'd like to move the adoption of the resolution as it relates to procurement policy. Adoption of procurement policy.
Second.
What page is that on, Jim?
Motion made and seconded. Discussion.
I would move that we add the same amendment with respect to procurement. Just change the word grants management to procurement. And I do have some questions.
Well, for questions.
Yeah. In the attachment, there's reference to taking account of competition requirements contained in any statute or regulation, and then it lists the compact, FTA, the common grant rules, the FTA circular, and ARRA. I hope ARRA may be irrelevant at this point, but we still have to live with it. There have been occasions where certain of these documents have other requirements nested within them. For example, I think it was the circular suggesting that you must follow the federal acquisition regulations. And it had been raised at one point that, no, we don't have to follow the federal acquisition regulations. But I think if FTA makes it a condition, we should. So whether we should add the FARs or just understand the things nested within these will also be applicable. My question.
So there is language at the end of the at the paragraph above the numbered paragraphs at 301. This WMATA shall take into account and give effect to competition requirements that are contained in any statute or regulation that applies to grant funds used in procurement, included but not limiting, but limited as following.
There's also the question of guidance. FTA may not have something included in its circular, but has strongly suggested in the guidance.
So if I add or guidance,
yeah, or guidance
to that,
yeah,
to, in that area?
That would satisfy me.
Okay.
In the next paragraph, I guess at the end of that paragraph, just wanted to understand the last sentence. WMATA procedures for procurements using non-federal funds shall provide appropriately for WMATA to, small I, make purchases using state and local sources. Is that the, do we have state preference language in our non-federal procurements?
In the compact.
The compact,
these are exceptions permitted in, yeah, under the compact.
Yeah. So that's a compact exception. We
correct
can designate a preference for state, for local.
Correct.
Not under, not using federal funds.
Correct.
Okay. And then making purchase using the GSA schedule, which
correct.
I...
both of
we
those
have
are
the authority to use the GSA schedule. I've been told we're unique in that capability, but would it also imply that we use the GSA schedule in full accordance with GSA rules and federal acquisition regulations?
Yes.
Yes, and I think we might want to say that.
You might want to cite the compact, too, if the authority comes from the compact.
So the second one comes from a federal understanding, and I think if we use the GSA schedule, we have to follow their rules. And on the next one, restrictions on procurements not using full and open competition. You're saying such approaches may be used only after written approval of General Counsel and Chief Procurement Officer. And that's one of the things I would think would be reported to the board as part of the regular process, not for approval, but for understanding how much this is being used.
Any other comments on the resolution? You've got the proposed changes?
So I have several, I believe, on this one.
Okay.
I believe the first change is to add a resolved clause that says, resolve that the Board of Directors directs the General Manager to present a plan to monitor the procurement policy by June 30 so that key performance measures can be adopted and monitored by the Board of Directors. Is that correct?
Okay.
Okay. And so key performance measures can be adopted and compliance monitored. Is that what you wanted? Resolve that the Board of Directors directs the General Manager to present a plan to, oh, I see, a plan to monitor.
Compliance.
I see. Thank you. Compliance.
With procurement policy.
With procurement policy. And did I understand you also wanted a change to this policy that would read as follows, the Board of Directors directs the General Manager to ensure that major projects and major procurement activities should not be under the same chain of command as procurement.
That's who we ask.
Yeah, I think that's the suggestion.
Does that state the policy part of it?
Yes.
Accurately, I think that's good.
Yes. Leaving it to the General Manager to decide how to do that.
And then the other two changes I have are to the policy itself, and those are the two that we just went over. I'll read them again. The first one is in section 301, second sentence, WMATA shall take into account and give effect to competition requirements that are contained in any statute, regulation, and then add or guidance that applies to grant funds used in procurement. And at the in the last paragraph of section 301, last sentence, WMATA's procedures for procurements using non-federal funds also shall provide, as authorized by the compact, for WMATA to sub 1, make purchases using state and local sources, and sub 2, make purchases using the GSA schedule in full accordance with the GSA regulations.
As far as our GSA regulation.
Those are the changes I have noted for this.
Calvin? Specific to the comment that Mort made with respect to 302, like it inserted there that the instances of determination of procurement that is non-open would be reported to the board.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you want that inserted?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll just add that as a new sentence after the first full sentence that will read that procurements not using full and open competition shall be reported to the board on a quarterly basis.
Hearing no other suggested amendments, having had a motion and a second, all those in favor of the adoption of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion passes. I hate this machine. It keeps putting me into secure mode every time I turn around.
It's not very compliant.
I do have, Mr. Chairman, I do have one item I want to bring up. This pertains to the finance and committee meeting that we will have later this week. I'd like to suggest, given the conversation that we had today and our focus on making sure that this FMO is focused on and that we pay attention to it over the coming months, and also to give our partners, our riders in our region an opportunity to review the FMO and also as a way to maintain their confidence in our ability to execute. I'd like to suggest that we postpone the capital budget discussion to the May 8th meeting. It also would give time for our various stakeholders to review our capital budget and also allow us to have our time to absorb that. This has taken up a lot of our time appropriately. We do need to continue our focus on that, and will allow us to take care of this other item next month.
I have one other question.
I think there's general consent.
Yes.
So.
Go ahead.
Do we have a, or can we get a timetable by which the report to Senator Mikulski will be drafted and submitted? She calls for it quickly.
Yeah. I'd say by next week, right? Yeah, next week.
Yeah. I mean, we want it in her hands before she's marking up the bill.
Yeah, yeah, next week.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
To follow up on a comment that Marcel made, finance administration is finance and administration. And part of the committee's role has traditionally been administration and management. Because of the press of events about finance and budget and changes, we have not made a regular schedule, for instance, about for a quarterly agenda of administration and management. review items on a regular basis for the board at finance and administration. And I could suggest that this would be one of the items that could be brought before finance and administration in terms of progress and review. It's the right committee at the right place with the right visibility. It has all of the members of the of the board engaged in the discussion. So on behalf of the board, I think it would make sense to have this regularly come when you think it's ready to come, but then after that, on a regular schedule, review on status with then, for instance, a template about measured progress, et cetera.
Yeah, I think, as was mentioned before, in a similar fashion to what we do in the safety committee. Yeah. Terms will change. I mean, it won't be hazardous, but only risks.
And a checklist of how we're doing on the things.
Corrective actions, the whole thing.
The other is that Alvin and I need to have a conversation with our external auditor, maybe this Thursday, about the board's expectation about the external auditor's role. The external auditor is an auditor for the board. This auditor works for the board, and the board accepts the audit. And I think the message needs to be to the external auditor that due diligence about tracking issues like this are an expectation that the board has of the external auditor, and that that is an extra check and balance in this process, that it cannot be that we have enough serious deficiencies and just completed at least 4 years of external audits without any management letter of any kind. And going forward, the expectation is that we learn as an agency and as a board from those problems or challenges or observations, and we are better able to fix those in a timely fashion when they're on the table. Alvin?
I think that's an excellent suggestion, Tom. And I would add that there's an audit committee meeting this coming Thursday. There are matters related to executive session on Thursday, but this portion of the meeting should be an open meeting. I think it would be appropriate and valuable for our outside auditor to comment on the matters related to the FMO report and their role of responsibility. I think that would be an appropriate aspect of our discussion, so we would have that portion of the meeting in open session on Thursday. Do I have to advertise that way, or can we do that? Okay.
You just did. It's half executive.
Are we complying with that? Okay.
Mort, did you have
a... I just had one other request, and I'm not sure I have the entire list committed to memory, but in reviewing the material we've been given, there are a series of reviews that are done by Federal Transit Administration. Series of reviews that are done. There is the triennial review that covers a lot of different matters. There is the FMO report. There's a procurement review that they do on a periodic basis. I think there's one on which?
He said the triennial.
I said the triennial. I think there's one on DBE, and there's implicitly one on safety that comes through the talk. But I'd like to be assured that each time one of those is done, the reports are shared with the board.
Certainly.
And it goes without saying that everything about procurement is not encapsulated in the FMO response. And there are other issues that several board members have raised that need some discussion and the same kind of thoughtful deliberation going forward. And we need to schedule that as a board in the not-too-distant future as we get this FMO audit behind us. But there are still issues that could stand a similar level of sensitive review. So
Mr. Chairman, I would just note that, you know, we've asked staff to come back generically to us on both grants and on procurement. And so I would hope that if there are items that they think should rise to the level of board monitoring, that they are clear about those with us, whether they are prompted by this particular review or not. Because our goal should be to end up monitoring, you know, a set of key issues that can help us all move forward together in these areas. So I would hope you bring us your best thinking on that, not just what is prescribed by this particular moment in time.
And one of those that had been mentioned by several board members is the MBE-DBE procurement processes, which are both federally mandated and locally supported. Any other comments, suggestions? Going once, going twice, adjourned. Thank you.